And this year we're going to explore the fourth letter between the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rabbi Emanuel Jacobowitz on how to relate to the land of Israel. As we've explored at length in the previous shorim, Rabbi Jacobowitz and the Rebbe had a dispute. Rabbi Jacobowitz thought that it would be a good idea to give away land from Israel to the Palestinians, to the Arabs, in order to ensure greater peace in the land of Israel, whereas the Rebbe thought this was a very bad idea. And in the previous shorim, we've seen that the Rebbe's primary argument to Rabbi Jacobowitz was based on the teachings of Shulchan Aruch, Simen Shin Chav Tes, Or HaChaim, section 329, where the Shulchan Aruch tells us that we are not meant to allow non-Jews to invade Jewish land that's close to the border, even for seemingly insignificant things, because if we do so, that will open up the land, that will open up the possibility of being attacked. So in this fourth letter, which is clearly from the month of Elul, the Rebbe begins, Asher kevon shekanal kol yisol b'cheses kashrus. Given that, as stated above, all Jewish people have a presumption of propriety, of innocence, of good intention, al achas kam v'kam manhigi yisol v'rabbani yisrael, how much more so the leaders of the Jewish people and the rabbis of the Jewish people, shekavnos mevadai, that their intention certainly is, kil shrein chachamin uzal, in the words of our sages, marbin sholom ba'ilam, they increase peace in the world, b'noisaf l'bein ha'yehudim, in addition to amongst the Jewish people. Yiratzin, may it be God's will, she'yisraba sholom b'cholom kulei, that peace be increased in the entire world, haschel mivinasati sholom v'aretz, beginning from, as God blesses us, I will set peace upon the land of Israel, ha'aretz ha'yedua hi'aretzin ha'kdesha, and Ba'aretz, the land in question, is our holy land, land of Israel. Sholem amiti, true peace, hamiyusod v'noyeg al piter eshaim, which is founded and practiced according to the Torah of life, and the Torah of life is hora b'chaim, it's teaching of life, v'toras emes, and the Torah of truth, ke'alocha psukah b'shulchan aruch, kil gam ki nechel k'erechaim, like the halacha that's ruled in Shulchan Aruch, in particular, in the section of Or HaChaim, Shimon Shin Chav Ches, section 328, Shuv Mechtave, which Rabbi Jacobowitz had quoted in his letter, and peace is, in fact, the vessel which holds on to God's blessing, that Rabbi Jacobowitz and his family should be blessed with being inscribed and sealed for a good year, a sweet year, in physicality and spirituality together. Then, as a postscript, the Rebbe says, this postscript follows in English, consistent with a previous correspondence in the subject, which was conducted in English.
Now that we are in the month of Elul, the month of stocktakes, I can no longer delay my response to some points in our correspondence, which are as yet unanswered. The reason for the delay being that I hoped that there would be some positive developments that would have a bearing on them. Regrettably, my hopes have not materialized. Indeed, the situation has further deteriorated. To begin with the basic point, namely the question of returning the liberated areas of Yehuda v'Shomron, etc., I maintain, as I have insisted from the beginning, that according to halacha, it is forbidden to return to Israel's territories. The same applies to the vital oil wells in Sinai, which should not have been surrendered. The claim that for the sake of peace, it is halachically justifiable to surrender the territories and the oil wells is hollow. For what was gained was not real lasting peace, but the promise of peace on paper, and from past and present experience, it is well known what such paper promises are worth. Since the surrender of the oil wells is now fait accompli, and the consequences have already become quite evident, it can well serve as an illustration of the fallacious and misguided arguments that have been employed in regard also to other points of controversy. When I quoted that the war specialists warned that surrendering the oil wells meant giving up the most vital resource, both in time of peace and even more so in time of emergency, and that would create a serious stranglehold, both in the economy and the security of the land, the answer was firstly that there was a three-month reserve oil, a physical possibility in prevailing circumstances, since oil cannot be compressed in a small territorially country like Israel cannot possibly provide storage for such a large quantity of oil reserves, either underground or in surface tanks. And secondly, a promise from the other side to supply all petroleum needs. Yet soon after the surrender of the oil wells, emissaries had to be dispatched to Mexico and elsewhere in a frantic effort to obtain oil at inflated prices and costly transportation. More recently, it was necessary to negotiate contracts for the importation of coal from distant countries such as South Africa and Australia. This further emphasizes the seriousness of the energy situation there in Israel. Similarly, shortly before the current visit of the Prime Minister and his entourage to Washington, a personal friend of mine who spoke to a personal friend of his, one who actively participated in all the Camp David negotiations and will participate in the upcoming Washington discussions, stated quite clearly that serious mistakes have been made in signing the treaty, since the same objective, normalization, etc., could have been obtained without surrendering all that had been surrendered. The latter replied verbatim, "Let's not go further into it," and added that the ways and means are now being explored to move away from that policy, etc. To refer to a further point of our discussion, namely my criticism of the government policy regarding terrorist attacks, in response to which I was taken to task for accusing the government of collusion with terrorists, which is of course entirely untrue. My criticism was only that the same policy of meekness and subservience pervades many departments of the government. I could mention a few recent events that support my contention, but we'll cite only two. First, while it has long been common knowledge, though not discussed publicly, it was recently publicized in the media that in his time, Ben-Gurion gave the directive to stop the search for Dr. Mengele, right when the search had become intensive. Secondly, even more recently, the controversy in connection with the excavations in the city of David. There is no reason to point out that when the attitude and treatment shown by the Israelis, with the backing of the higher-ups, has been towards the demonstrators against this desecration. Yet when there was an Arab demonstration in another place, but in a similar situation, the newly discovered tunnel under the Temple Mount, further exploration was immediately stopped. No further commentary is necessary. Another recent development bore out a view I expressed during the Yom Kippur War. I urged them on the basis of halacha to pursue the enemy ad ridata, based on Deuteronomy 20:20 and see also Numbers 33:35, namely to take Damascus not for occupation, but to ensure that it never again would pose a threat. It was then also common knowledge that Soviet advisors were present there with headquarters, etc. Only a few hours of occupation would have been sufficient to accomplish the task, but for strange reasons, it was not done. The result of the failures are evident and have been particularly underscored recently by the moving of Soviet surface-to-air missiles and the military actions that were necessary to counter Soviet penetration, including the bombing of the nuclear reactor in Iraq, although the latter actions show a salutary departure from the policy of appeasement and subservience. Finally, a more personal point, hence it comes to the last, in reference to the accusation that Lubavitch instigated or participated in the demonstration against the chief rabbi in his visit here, be it noted that it is accepted rule in all legal systems, not to mention the halacha, that the burden of proof is on the accuser and on the accused, and that everyone is deemed innocent until proven guilty, especially in regard to Jews, who are all under presumption of innocence. This elementary principle was ignored, and as yet no basis for the said charge has been submitted. Moreover, various rabbinic organizations came out publicly against the chief rabbi, while Lubavitch was the one that did not come out against him. In light of this, it is hardly right to consider that the case is closed because I said so-and-so. The proper conclusion should be that there should not have been a case in the first place, since the informant of the chief rabbi's office could not substantiate the charge. Indeed, if a case is in order, it is against the informer also to prevent the repetition of such a mistake. And here the rabbi concludes, we sign the truth, and we end on a good note, uv shalom, with peace, uv ichulam, with wishes, l'ksiva v'hasima teva, for being written and inscribed for good in the Book of Life.